Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. 10 years ago, Smart Talk debuted in response to the Great Recession, which was fueled in part by a crisis in housing. Then it was unusual mortgages and home buyers who got in over their heads. A decade later, the economy is robust. But there's a new issue with housing, according to NPR.
Today, people who want to buy, or in a lot of cases even just rent, are being priced out of the market because there just aren't enough places for sale or for rent.
Well, that's just one of the issues that we're talking about today, and that is coming from the NPR report this week. Low inventory, high prices, and that is, of course, from NPR talking on a national basis. But we want to talk about Pennsylvania and central Pennsylvania in particular. Joining us is Todd Umbenhauer, president of the Pennsylvania Association of Realtors. Mr. Umbenhauer, welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, Scott. Nice to be with you again.
Also, Daniel Durden, CEO of the Pennsylvania Builders Association. Mr. Durden, I'm glad to see you again.
Good morning, Scott. Thank you.
And Aaron Wolf, an associate broker with Wolf & Company Realtors. Ms. Wolf, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
If you have a question or a comment about housing, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. In fact, I'd like to hear some of your experiences for those who have been in the market, maybe sold your home, maybe bought a house. I'd like to hear your experiences if you've done that in the last couple years. 1-800-729-7532. You can send us an email at smarttalk@wytf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WYTF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWYTF. Again, that phone number is 1-800-729-7532. Todd Umbenhauer, let me start with you. You heard the NPR report, and the positioning of that report is that nationally that there is low inventory and high prices for houses right now, that I don't know whether we'd say that it has slowed down the market, but at least it is a challenge for those who are in the market today. Is that the case here in Pennsylvania?
Well, Scott, that's a very accurate statement. In fact, I'll give you a quote from the second quarter report from the National Association of Realtors, because what they said about the national market could really be applied for Pennsylvania and right here in central Pennsylvania. The quote is, amidst staggeringly low inventory levels in much of the country, existing home sales cooled and home prices maintained their robust level of appreciation. There's a lot in that one sentence, and I think you'll find in many of the marketplaces across Pennsylvania, inventory levels are just well below what we would consider to be a balanced market. A balanced market would offer a six-month supply of inventory for buyers to consider. Right now, nationally, we're looking at about a 4.1%, 4.1-month supply of housing inventory, so that is a significant lower number of properties for people who are in the market looking to buy. And as I travel across Pennsylvania, I'm hearing that in just about every section of Pennsylvania, low inventory is causing multiple offers on properties that are for sale, which of course is driving up the prices that people are paying.
So what's causing this? A lot of people do the simple math, but I just want to hear your explanation as to why you think we've gotten into this situation.
Well, there's a number of things that could be contributing to that. One of the things that we're finding is that people who own their homes currently, they're looking at the economic climate, and the economy is good, but the interest rates are slowly increasing for mortgage interest rates. The Fed is talking about 4 additional increases this year. They're not large increases, but every increase does make a difference with the monthly mortgage payment. So people who are sitting in their homes now saying, you know what, number one, there's not a lot to look at out there, and number two, the interest rates are gradually starting to increase, so maybe we'll just stay where we are. We are seeing now millennials starting to come into the marketplace. They were slow to enter the market, but now when you enter, and millennials, of course, are now the largest demographic in the country, and now those folks are entering the marketplace, which is adding another segment of competition for those who are in the housing market. So there's, people are just deciding to stay in their homes for whatever reason, so they're not listing. So there's fewer properties for people to consider who are in the market, and we see the millennials now coming into the market at a slow rate, but still adding to the competition.
Those interest rates you're talking about, what's the average interest rate that buyers are getting today?
You're probably looking somewhere in the area of about 4.5%. It depends on down payments and what particular program that you're looking for.
You know, I kind of have to laugh at that, Todd. In the mid 80s, I locked in at 7.5, and yeah. I was thrilled at that time.
And I'm laughing right there with you. Those of us who've been in business a long time remember interest rates of 18%. And then people actually refinancing their homes three times within a one-year period of time because it made sense to do it each time they refinance as the mortgage rates were dropping very rapidly.
Yeah. Aaron Wolf, you work here in central Pennsylvania. Your family's been in the business for a long time. You see this on the ground every day. What are you seeing?
Absolutely. What I'm seeing is it has become essential for buyers who are looking to get into the market to be fully prepared from day one. So many folks are sitting and they love looking at all these houses on their phones. They're using Realtor.com and Zillow, and they're excited to get out there and walk through the front door for the first time and see these properties. But it's essential to have your financing worked out, to be prepared, because given the competitive nature of the market right now, days on market are way down. Houses are selling very quickly. So if you're walking through a property that you end up loving and want to move forward on, and you don't have your pre-approval worked out, you're not going to be able to get those logistics lined up quickly enough to compete with the other offers that seller might be receiving.
So compete is one of the key words there, that it is such a competitive market that just what you're saying, you have to be prepared.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes as realtors, we worry about seeming maybe like the pushy salesperson, or we know that first-time home buyers are often intimidated by the idea of going to the lender right away. But truly, that is what is essential to get this process started. You have to know not only what you can afford, and a lot of folks tell us, we know what we're comfortable with. We know what we can afford. Financing won't be a problem. And you want to trust them and believe them with that. But also what kind of loan they'll be using, because as Todd mentioned earlier, the interest rate depends on what product you choose. But not all houses are in a condition to qualify for all loan types. So that piece is very important when starting your search. And I've had several instances where, unfortunately, folks that were just starting the process, they're thinking, I'm not really ready right now. I'm just starting to casually look. And that's all fun and games until we're casually looking at something that checks all your boxes. And now it's a Friday evening. You want to write an offer. We have to have it in by 5 o'clock because they're expecting a couple other offers. Your lender doesn't work after business hours. And unfortunately, you're just not going to be able to throw your hat in the ring on this one.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned being prepared, and part of being prepared, and Todd, I'll ask you about this on a statewide basis. One of the challenges that those buying a home, especially first-time home buyers, young couples, young people, face is those down payments and closing costs. What are we looking at as far as a down payment on a home today, and is that still a major challenge?
Well, there's no question, Lamar, that the amount of cash needed is a challenge, particularly for first-time home buyers. And what I often will do when talking to people casually about how much they'll need, it does depend on the mortgage product, but I will say, listen, if you want to figure your closing costs, figure about 6% of the purchase price of the home will be your closing costs, and then you'll add your down payment amount to that number. Now, fortunately, and these don't fit all people's circumstances, and I know in Tuesday's NPR show, the concern of the woman who was looking for a home was she knows that there were predatory lending practices out there. Well, fortunately, we have tried and true government programs, which are very good. USDA mortgages provide a 100% financing. VA provides 100% financing for veterans. FHA financing, which is available to most people, the financing amount is 96.5%. So there are very low or no down payment programs that are available, but that still does leave considerable closing costs that have to be paid. And that's why, you know, we as an association are so supportive of the first-time home buyer savings account program, which is working its way through the Pennsylvania legislature right now, which would allow first-time buyers to save, to make contributions into an account specifically for the purchase of a first home, and those deposits would serve as deductions in their state income tax returns and would accrue interest without any taxes on that interest. And the great thing is, not only could the first-time home buyer open up an account like that, but parents and grandparents could as well. So there would be a real incentive to start saving for the purchase of a first home, and those funds could be used for anything, down payment or closing costs or the combination of the two.
Well, that sounds very much like the 529 college savings plans.
Very, very similar. That comparison has been made before. And this has bipartisan support working its way through the legislature. We're hoping that this could be signed into law next year.
Mm. And another aspect of this that we want to discuss is we want to talk about new homes and construction of new homes. As part of that NPR report, NPR is reporting that new home construction is at its lowest rate since the 1980s. With us is Daniel Durden, who is the CEO of the Pennsylvania Builders Association. Mr. Durden, why? Why are we at that low rate, the most in like 30 years?
There's a whole list of items that I could get into, and I will. Traditionally, what we've referred to oftentimes is what we call the three L's, and the L's being land, labor, and loans. Excuse me. Right now, it is very difficult for a builder or developer to get a substantial parcel of land that they can develop and turn into a subdivision or a community. The cost per lot, for instance, here in Dauphin County, is approximately $100,000 before the builder can start to put your house on the land. If you do the math building up from that, the builder wants to make a profit. The homeowner wants to find a home they can afford. If you already have that as a sunk cost before you start, you've already eliminated a huge proportion of potential buyers from buying a first-time home. It's very hard to build a affordable home for first-time buyers right now.
Well, let me just follow up on that. Did you say the average price was $100,000 in Dauphin County?
Yeah, cost sunk for a brand new lot.
How big
fully
a lot?
Developed. I don't want to guess on that because I don't have the stats in front of me, but we're talking less than a half lot or smaller, half acre or smaller. We're not talking mansion lots. So the costs are in the permitting, in the entitling of the land, in the preparation and the mitigation of environmental impact. Again, before you start to dig the foundation, we'll call that that's the regulatory burden, but we'll call that the lots or the land. Financing is one of the few areas that has improved in the last few years for home buyers and home builders. At the trough of the downturn, but builders could not get acquisition, development, construction loans to build new homes. So that was kind of off the table. So new buyers essentially had to finance the whole thing from day one themselves, which of course discourages any new construction. That situation has righted itself in large part, not entirely, but in large part. The third piece, though, that's a huge problem right now for us is labor. So if a builder wants to build, I'm going to make this number up, 10 homes, he probably doesn't have the trained labor on site that he can employ to put on the job to build those 10 homes. So he's going to sub it out. He's going to hire people who may not be as qualified as he'd like. But more likely, what he's going to do is build fewer homes.
Why? Why is labor, there are a labor shortage?
It's a long-term problem. I think it's systemic. And it gets back to parts of the inventory thing we'll get to later. But in large part, and I'm as guilty of this as many of us are, we grew up thinking, I'm going to get my kid a four-year education. The only future is a college education and an office job where I'm going to work in air conditioning. And we discouraged or looked down on people who worked with their hands, people who produce things you can hold and see. And so now, after a few generations of that emphasis in our culture and our society, we don't have enough electricians, we don't have enough plumbers, we don't have bricklayers, we don't have carpenters, we don't have welders, the list goes on. Our problem is one we share with the manufacturing field. So they suffer from the same shortage of trained labor, and now we have to compete with them to convince that young kid who wants to work with his hands, no, don't go into manufacturing, we need you here in home building.
With a shortage of labor, have salaries gone up?
They have, but again, part of the problem there is if I take, the builder, take on brand new worker who has minimal skills, train him, teach him the ropes, there's every likelihood that he's going to be hired away either into a hotter market or by somebody who can pay a little more or into a different industry where those skills are translatable. For instance, just because you're an electrician currently working in residence doesn't mean you can't move into commercial electrical work in the near future.
When you say a hotter market, Central Pennsylvania, I imagine, is a fairly, Cumberland County is one of the fastest growing counties in the state. Lancaster County is a fast growing county in Pennsylvania. But are you talking about, like, say, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, or out of state where, growing markets?
By Pennsylvania standards, the mid-state is doing very well, particularly Harrisburg to Carlisle, Lancaster, York. But I said that's by Pennsylvania standards. We're actually under the national average in terms of construction activity. So, for instance, if you want to look for opportunities, you could look to neighboring states as well as the big markets like Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. There's nothing that would prevent a 24-year-old with skills from going to Ohio or Maryland or further afield to really hot markets in places like Texas or wherever. For instance, right now, something like 20% of the new homes built in the country every year are built in one state, and that is Texas. And part of that is it's a lower regulatory burden. Part of that is wages are actually going up faster there than they are in much of the rest of the country, so homes are more affordable, but also land is more available.
What does an average construction worker say that, 30-year-old who has been around for 5 or 6 years, average salary look like?
You know, I couldn't give you a solid figure, and it's all over the board depending on the size of the company.
But it's a good living.
Yeah, it's great living. I mean, now, and that's not always been true. Bluntly, there was a time when those guys worked hard and didn't get paid particularly well. Now the demand is such that if your current employer is not offering what you've perceived to be a good wage, somebody else will be. And it's a chronic problem in a sense with our own members and sometimes hiring qualified people away from one another because they're that desperate for good labor.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about the housing market here in Pennsylvania and across the country. NPR is producing a series this week called Shut Out of the Market, a challenge that has popped up here in the United States. And as you've heard on the program today, here in Pennsylvania is that there's a low inventory of houses out there, and the prices consequently are higher. But you know, one thing I'm sure that our guest today would say, if you're looking to buy, you're looking to sell, it's still a good market out there. It's just that these are some challenges that have popped up. Joining us on today's program is Daniel Durden, CEO of the Pennsylvania Builders Association. Todd Umbenhauer is president of the Pennsylvania Association of Realtors. And Aaron Wolf is an associate broker with Wolf & Company Realtors. If you have a question or a comment, maybe a story to tell, an experience, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Let's go to Beth in Mechanicsburg. Beth, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you a little bit about my experience. My fiance and I are older millennials. We are college educated, a good income, good credit, and we were still just about shut out of the market. We had tried several times over the last year to get a home under contract. We would no sooner look at a house than there were already six offers. We were eligible for a first-time home buyer loan, and because of the competition, we had to go with a conventional loan to be more, desirable to a seller, so there would be less appraisal stuff. Then finally, when we did get a home under contract, we're willing to overlook a bad home inspection because we knew there were other offers and terrified to go back to those sellers with demands and then have them say, hey, take a hike. So I just wanted to share that. Definitely the case in central Pennsylvania.
Well,
it is a tough market for first-time buyers.
Beth, I want to thank you for calling in because I hate to say it, but it sounds like your story may be typical of a lot of people today. So we'll find out. Thank you very much for sharing your experience. Aaron, I see you shaking your head or nodding your head. Yes, that I don't know if typical is the right word, but maybe commonplace.
Beth brings up a good point. She talked about her loan type, and what we're finding is that the dollar amount isn't everything. When you make an offer on a property, there are so many different pieces to that offer, and the type of loan you're using is one of them. So yes, many buyers who would qualify for a specialized program to target first-time home buyers offering low down payments and other incentives aren't really able to capture the full benefit of that opportunity because it does make a less attractive offer to a seller looking for clean, conventional financing, no appraisal hurdles. Now, of course, the value is still an appraisal hurdle itself, but a lot of those government-backed loan products require an appraisal to include a HUD inspection of the property.
Housing and urban development, yeah.
Yes. So even if a buyer is not concerned about the certain conditions, they might be willing to accept needing to put a little bit of elbow grease into a property, but their lender might say, well, no, that's not going to work for us.
Yeah.
So,
the idea behind the regulations, of course, is that someone's not buying a dud, that
sure.
They're not spending a lot of money and going into a home that is going to require a lot of work and maybe even unsafe. But Todd, what about what you heard from Beth and what Aaron had to say?
Well, for Beth, I can say I feel her pain. And it's interesting, in 2009 or 2010, Beth would have been welcomed with open arms for people who had their homes on the market for sale because the market was very, very different back then. The reality of today's market, and none of us as salespeople like to make this statement, but we know that when we're going through a property today, in the average price market segment, my comment to them is you pretty much have to make your decision while you're standing in the living room because there's not much time to go back and think about it over the weekend because the home, as Aaron said, will be long gone by then. We're finding that buyers, and I absolutely positively beg buyers to get home inspections and whatever tests would be appropriate. But we are finding, as was the case in Beth's scenario, people were coming in with cash agreements of sale. They're coming in not requiring any inspections. Buyers will typically have a home inspection. Some will have a radon test. Most will have a wood-destroying insect infestation inspection. But we're finding that people are saying, listen, in order to get the home I want, I'm going to have to drop these inspections because it's making my offer look less competitive with the others who have put an agreement in on the same home. It's a very, very challenging situation to buy a home without a professional home inspection, but that communicates, I'll use the word frenzy in the marketplace. When you've got five or six or seven people showing up at the house on the first day that it comes on the market, and at least half of them are putting in an agreement of sale that night, yeah, it does create some desperation, and buyers have to make some decisions that in other markets they would not make.
Okay, that almost sounds like a dream come true for a buyer, that you put a house on the sale, and in one day you got three or four people that are making offers. I mean, that happens?
And I think what you meant to say there is it's a dream for the seller.
I'm sorry. Yes, did sure. I say buyer?
This is a great time to be a seller, without question. Now, you can't disproportionately price your house because, wow, I've heard the market's hot, so I've got a $250,000 home, which I'll put on the market for $325,000. That won't work for a number of reasons. But, yes, if you're a seller in today's marketplace, you can anticipate a very short days on market. We're seeing days on market drop all across the state. For the I've seen days on market in various areas drop from 75 in 2014, and then they're down to 67, and then they're down to, in some cases, 50 or even under 50 days on market. So the days on market on average are dropping very steadily year over year, but there are still those cases. That's an average number. There are still those cases where you can have multiple offers within 24 hours of putting your home on the market for sale.
Dan, this would seem to say then, now most home sales, most home transactions, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in my research I found that most are existing homes. But this would seem to say if someone is concerned about, you know, how a home is built, if there are some issues with it, that maybe more people would opt for building. I mean, does that factor into it? I mean,
you're singing from my song sheet. That's exactly what I would love everyone to be thinking. We'd love to think a new home is for everyone, and we think it is for a lot of people. It's not for everyone in reality. I just want to get to the one point before we return to this, but Todd was correct. It's a great time to be a seller with the caveat. You have to be a seller who knows where you want to go after you sell your home. One of the problems with our inventory logjam is people don't want to sell because even if they get a great price, they have nowhere to go. They don't feel they can afford their next house, so they stay where they are. And they don't open up the inventory.
Well, there are a lot of people moving back in, mom and dad, but that's definitely an issue.
Which isn't really helping our problem either. At any rate, we'd love to see more people moving to new homes. And what I'd love to see in the state of Pennsylvania is more starter homes being built so people could start there as opposed to looking to new homes only as their new move-up option. But that's kind of where we've gotten ever since the recovery from the downturn. So it's really hard to qualify financially to get into a new home community for a lot of people right out of the bat.
Here's an email from Rick in Harrisburg. He says, Pennsylvania should have an abundance of used homes. Baby boomers are retiring in droves, and many should be cashing out on the value of their homes to live simpler lifestyles. If there's a housing shortage in Pennsylvania, it's because, one, buyers are expecting to buy new, and two, there is a builder crew shortage that can't support the demand. Now, we've addressed that a little bit, but what about buyers are expecting to buy new? Todd, let me turn to you on that one. I mean, the point he makes, simple demographics say that baby boomers are retiring and that many are looking to downsize.
Well, that is certainly true. They're selling the two to the four bedroom, two and a half bath colonial because they just don't need that space anymore. And they're moving into a home that better suits their lifestyle. They're looking for single family dwellings. But I guess in response to the question, maybe they're not doing it at the rate that we need them to be doing it because there remains a shortage of inventory. And in fact, just to amplify one of the comments that Daniel was making, according to Lawrence Hewen, who's NAR's chief, the National Association of Realtors chief economist, new housing starts are far lower than they need to be to balance the market. And he suggests that an ease of some of the municipal regulations might help in that process. Sometimes we're working with a builder who's looking to do a two-lot subdivision that would create some new inventory. And that can be, surprisingly, a six-month task, a one-year task, to achieve a two-lot subdivision with thousands of dollars of engineering and survey costs at play. And that discourages some smaller builders from taking that step. That's tying up a lot of time and money for a long time to create one or two new home opportunities to be built. So there's a lot of things that play into it, and we'd love to see Daniel and his contemporaries be able to build more new construction because that would certainly satisfy what many of the people in the marketplace are looking for, and that's, hey, a brand new home. Let's take a look at that.
Daniel, what about that?
I couldn't agree more with everything Todd said. A couple of factors, though, about what the caller brought up that are accurate, and yet they don't necessarily lead to the conclusion we'd all draw. Pennsylvania has some of the oldest housing stock in the country as a state. In fact, I believe last time I looked at the stats, Philadelphia has the oldest housing stock of any city in America. We desperately need more newer homes. But even though people are retiring, and they may be looking to downsize, I think we can all anecdotally think of friends who say they want to downsize and then magically buy a newer, larger home than they had previously. Mm-hmm. A lot of people looking to downsize are looking for a specific type of home. So it doesn't matter that there's an affordable, terrific townhome. They're not looking for a three-story walk-up when they're 65 and they have an artificial hip and a new knee. They're looking for living on the same level, or they're looking and living in a place where they may be able to share their dwelling with some other younger part of their family.
Or maybe a parent.
Exactly. Those of us in the sandwich generation, right, you may have both a child and a parent in the same home. So they sometimes are looking for more unique types of homes than existing homes that were built 30, 40, 50 years ago. There aren't many available, or they're certainly not on the market.
I'm jumping around on the three of you here with topics, but some of these things that are issues here. Daniel, when we're talking about home construction and prices, this is a factor in the price of a new home. Building materials. Understand that building materials have gone up. I don't know if a lot is a good way to describe it, but that it is an issue right now. And one that's been in the news here recently is lumber coming from Canada because of the tariffs that have been placed on Canada by the United States and the Trump administration. So how much of an issue is that when it comes to the cost of a new home?
Lumber is huge. Dimensional lumber is the single largest component of a new stick-built home. So you can imagine if there is a tariff, as there is now for Canadian lumber, that's going to increase the price of the home overall dramatically. What we're seeing is increases on the order of about 20% in the cost of the lumber. That doesn't mean the overall home price goes up 20. But so if the price of lumber goes up 20%, the builder is either going to try to eat some of that or he's got to pass it on to his consumer. Oftentimes they'll do a little of both. But it means that many more potential buyers are priced out of the market. The lumber issue is a little bit unique only in that it's been an on and off problem issue in terms of importation of Canadian lumber for about 30 years now. We have a tariff, we don't have a tariff, we have a tariff, we don't. The United States only produces about 2/3 of its necessary dimensional lumber domestically. We think we could produce more, but we don't, or at least we don't bring it to market. And in fact, a lot of the Western mills ship their lumber to China because they can make more money overseas than they can bring it into the domestic market. But when you add on the newer tariffs that we're seeing from the administration that apply to some of the alternative products that we'd use for lumber, for instance, you can use steel studs in some cases, not typically in a single family home, but certainly multifamily. And then the ancillary products you furnish a home with, so the appliances all require aluminum and steel and other products that now have tariffs attached. And the price increases overall in the home, all the buyer knows is, I was pricing out a home at X and now you're telling me it's X plus 3. Suddenly I don't qualify or I can't pull the trigger on a number that's that big.
Aaron, I see you nodding your head. Have you had that experience with clients?
Well, we've touched on a couple things. Talking about the baby boomers selling their homes, we are seeing that, of course, and a lot of them are the ones building because they can afford to do so. So they're downsizing, but they're downsizing in luxury. And when they put their four-bedroom colonial home on the market at a price point around, let's just call it an even 300, that doesn't help my first-time home buyers because they're not there yet. And so oftentimes those young people do ask about building. Okay, there's nothing out there for me. Can I build? But as we've discussed earlier, when you look at the development costs, the price of land, for a builder to get a total package price low enough to attract those first-time home buyers, it's often not possible. And if it is, usually you're looking at the three-story townhomes, properties built on slabs because of the expense of excavation. So you're looking at smaller homes, smaller footprints, less storage, and oftentimes several flights of steps. And that's not always what they're looking for, but Sometimes they make those sacrifices because the new is really attractive to them.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about an issue here in the United States and also here in Pennsylvania, as you've heard on the program, of housing in the market right now, low inventory and higher prices, some other issues involved as well. If you have a question or a comment, maybe a story to tell, an experience that you've had buying a home, selling a home in the last couple years, give us a call. We'd like to hear from you. 1-800-729-7532 is the number to call. You could send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. Leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number is 1-800-729-7532. Aaron, I'm going to address this one to you. This is a listener email. It says, I believe that the market seems hot because people buying houses all want the same houses. Maybe they're saying not as hot. I don't believe it's an issue of inventory, an issue of desirable inventory. There are at least three houses available in a two-block radius of my home, and they seem to have been for sale for months. Is that kind of narrowing down? Is that an accurate statement, or just what? From
well,
your experience,
it's
what
a bit
you're
of
seeing.
It's a bit of a loaded question. I would agree that yes, people are ideally all looking for the same thing, and I'm going to call that the HTV brainwash a little bit. I think that the more move-in ready, the more the nicer your house shows, that's certainly going to attract a larger pool of buyers. Young people who are working long hours to pay off student loans and now try to pay a new mortgage, they don't have a lot of extra time to deal with a fixer-upper. So certainly making the house attractive to that millennial population is important. Homes that are sitting could have a variety of things going on. Most obviously could be price, if they're not priced appropriately for their condition or the way that, that they're appearing online. What homeowners need to remember is that the huge majority of the home buying population is looking online, and a lot of them are looking on these, you know, 6-inch smartphones. So the impression that your property makes on that screen on the very first swipe is very, very important.
Wow. It's been a long time since I've been in the market, but never really thought of it that way. Of knew that people were looking online, but on their phone, and your home is reduced, your house is reduced to the size of the photograph on that phone.
Absolutely,
that's changed things, I'd say.
Professional photography is very important, and staging is. Can make a world of difference if you're willing to spring for it. But truly, you kind of have one shot. When buyers get an alert that there's a new listing meeting their criteria in their search with whatever app they're using, you really get one shot. They're looking at it, and it's I like it or an I don't like it. And if they don't like the way it looks on their phone, they're probably not coming through your front door.
Todd, it's a different world than when I was looking for a house, and I'm one of those baby boomers.
Yeah, as am I, and I couldn't agree more with what Aaron was saying. If a property does not show well online, people will not show up at your front door. Now, in this marketplace, you have a little better shot of getting them there, but absolutely, the way that it presents on the mobile devices is going to determine to some degree what kind of traffic you're going to get. And I guess one thing that I'd like to add to the conversation, I mean, we've been talking a lot about sellers, and it's a great day to be a seller, and that can sound very discouraging to buyers who are out there. Listen, the interest rates are still at rates, but I'll still use the word historically low rates. Mm-hmm. I mean, when the GIs were coming back after World War II, they were paying 5% interest. I never dreamt in my years in real estate that we would again see those days of low interest rates. My recommendation to the young buyers, first-time buyers that I'm working with now, who are finding themselves losing in the competition because they're up against somebody else who's got better financing terms, more cash, things of that nature, is maybe adjust your sales a little bit. Maybe trying to buy that first single detached home. instead of a twin. Maybe that's not the best strategy. Maybe you have to adjust your sights a bit and say, you know what, I'm tired of getting beat out on these single detached homes I'm looking at. Maybe I should look at a twin that maybe needs a few gallons of paint to be put on the inside, because I hate to see people miss the opportunity of these incredibly good interest rates because they're trying to find the perfect home. Almost like, well, I want to move out of my parents' home and into a home that's sort of similar to theirs. That's a very difficult move to make. Just adjust your sights a little bit. Be willing to put, and everybody is busy, everybody is working, most people are two-income families. But maybe you say, you know what, we don't have to paint the entire house in the first week. We don't have to turn it into an HGTV house in the first month. We've got time to work on it, and this might be our way to get into the market before those interest rates maybe price us out of the market down the road.
All right, I got it. You just brought something up, that HGTV. How many people that, I mean, just a personal observation, my wife watches it all the time, and I got so many projects on board now. And in talking to, we bought new flooring, and talking to the salesperson, there was someone looking at blockboard. He said, oh, HGTV must have done something on blockboard last night. I hear so many people talking about watching that network and the things they learn, the things they'd like to do to their own home or in a new home. Just anecdotally, has that had an impact on your industry?
It's enormous, and particularly on the remodelers who we represent, because home buyers will see something on television and they don't calculate just how expensive that may be, particularly if it involves moving a supporting wall or bringing...
Well, yeah, it happens in 10 seconds on
right,
TV.
Right, a 40-year-old house up to the current safety and energy code. Those things aren't instant, and they're certainly not cheap. The other thing is, frequently what will happen is a home buyer will presume their massive personal skills can handle it themselves. Then they get midway in the project, and what was a reasonably difficult project becomes a seriously expensive project, because now you have to both fix the problem and then bring it up to the goal you have. So it leads to a lot of frustration, homeowners and home buyers. We see it on the buying end as well, and I think part of it's our growing expectations of society, because we are so much wealthier and we grew up in, let's be blunt, nicer conditions than generations previous to us. If you think back to those GIs returning from World War II, they bought a three-bedroom, one-bath home that was probably a smaller square footage than the first apartment for most people coming out of college, and they thought it was a mansion, because to them it was. Our expectations have dramatically increased. To get back to what the email was referring to, is price is still everything, whether it's new home or whether it's an existing home. If you're priced to the community you're in and to the competition of the homes you're in, you're going to sell. The problem is, in some areas, there aren't a lot of buyers looking, and they may not ever be looking at the price that's being asked. So it's all about the reasonable price for where you are. People forget, again, homes are not stamped out like cookie cutters. It's micro-location, in a sense. So every home is unique, both in its good features, we hope, but also in some of its downside features, which may not be the home, it may be its neighbors, it may be the taxing authority that home happens to sit in.
School district.
Absolutely. We find the school district is actually a bigger draw for most new home buyers than any single feature in the home.
I've heard that. Melvin from York is on the line. Melvin, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
So I just moved back from California. I've been staring at properties here in the York area for about 2 years now. And just happened to notice that the overall price increase, basically what I was looking for a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, might have jumped $100,000 in price. So I know that they seem to be basing the housing market and the inflation off of California's housing boom, from everything I've read so far. Looking for any kind of tips as far as, like I said, I'm a veteran, so I'll be using my VA loan. Any tips that I could use to for the local area? Everything I've looked at so far, it looks like everything is just overpriced. And I'm an inspector by trade, so you can't pull the wool over. But a little bit harder to pull the wool over, so to speak.
I'm keep you on the line.
Tips you might have for me.
Yeah, Melvin, I'm going to keep you on the line. Todd, what about that? I mean, in California, just picture, I don't know, a home here. I don't know what the ratio is, but a home here in central Pennsylvania probably costs three times the amount, at least twice in California. So what kind of advice, someone moving from California, coming to Pennsylvania, but inflation has followed him?
Yeah, the median price in the greater Harrisburg area increased 1.6% over last year. Surprisingly low, the average sale price dropped 2.8% over the same period last year. Days on market, as I mentioned, are, you know, in the Harrisburg area, 84 days in the market in 2014. 53 days on the market average in June 2018. Last year it was 62. So things each year are selling faster. Prices are going up, but maybe not by the percentage that you might see in some other areas. The recommendations, you know, unfortunately, as realtors, we don't control the market. We simply represent the market. And I think what I might suggest to the caller is what I said a moment ago. You know, what are some possible alternatives? You know, moving the search to a slightly different area that still works from the standpoint of work situations and things of that nature. Are there opportunities, and Aaron may be able to speak to this more effectively than me, are there areas outside York that might be a little more price competitive? Obviously, he's got great financing opportunities, being a veteran. And thank you for your service. You've got 100% financing available, so that, you know, that lowers those down payment requirements. So I think I might, you know, look at the marketplace within the overall area where you're searching and see if maybe there's some pockets where you find the pricing is a little more affordable than maybe the specific area that you're looking in right now.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. We only have about 2 minutes left. I want to thank all three of you for being with us today. So we've established that there's a tight inventory out there and prices are a little bit higher. So, Todd, let me start with you. What has to happen? About 30 seconds or less.
Well, what has to happen, I believe, we need more inventory. If we can get more new home starts, that would be great. I think for buyers, they need to do exactly what Aaron said. They need to be ready to pull the trigger from the first time they go out the door looking at houses, and from there make sure their offer is as competitive as they can make it. Do things that don't cost them time or opportunity that the seller is looking for, adjusting your settlement date, things of that nature to satisfy what the seller wants.
Aaron, about 30 seconds.
Absolutely. It is still a great time to be buying and selling real estate, and we don't want the conversation about these challenges to deter anyone or intimidate anyone. It's important to be prepared, and it's important to have an experienced professional on your side assisting you as you navigate this process.
Daniel, what about home buying? Home building.
Yeah, we focused on some of the negatives, but that's partly a product of the good thing, which is to say we have a lot of buyers now. They're just chasing fewer homes. We would encourage anyone to purchase now. Now's the time when you can buy the best homes that are being built. They're built to higher standards for conservation of energy, water, health and safety, and offer features that, as I alluded to earlier, my parents could only dream of having in a private home.
I want to thank the three of you for being with us today. Todd Ombenhauer is president of the Pennsylvania Association of Realtors, Daniel Durden, CEO of the Pennsylvania Builders Association, and Aaron Wolf is associate broker with Wolf & Company Realtors. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And if you would like to continue this conversation, you can do it online. Go to our website, WITF.org. I see we had some emails come in at the very last moment that we weren't able to get to. Coming up on tomorrow's program, yes, it is the Friday edition of Smart Talk, coming up on tomorrow's program, where we're going to be talking about a little bit of history in the first part of the program. One of, maybe the only time in Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania, where there was a murder in a courtroom. Happened in the 1950s in Cumberland County, and Cumberland County is going to reenact that. So we'll be talking about that history as a part of tomorrow's program. Also, something that is relatively new. You probably have heard about Pennsylvania universities and colleges that have created esports teams. Competitors that are competing with other schools in video games. Harrisburg University of Science and Technology is looking to be one of the nation's leaders in that area, and we'll be talking about esports on tomorrow's program.